All right, everyone. We might get started, if that's okay, to make sure we have time to get through our session. So our topic this afternoon, I think, fits really nicely with a lot of the discussion that's taken place in the seminar to date. We have Gloria, you, presenting on actuarial operations. How should we structure our actuarial teams, processes and systems into 2030? So as I just said to Gloria, I think any presentation that really considers the question of how things are going to look 10 to 15 years out will inevitably be fascinating. So, look, the usual deal applies. Gloria will hopefully speak for about 30 minutes and then we'll have a bit of time for questions at the end. And just reminding everyone, if you have questions and you come up to the mic, please state your name. So just to introduce Gloria, Gloria is a director at Deloitte and has been working in the general insurance industry since 2001. Her general insurance experience spans Australia, New Zealand and Asia and includes fulfilling statutory actuary roles for a number of Asia-Pacific general insurers and reinsurers. She's passionate about helping businesses transform their operations to capitalise on opportunities in the ever-changing landscape. She's also actively involved in the Institute of Actuaries of Australia. She was a member of the board from 2009 to 14 and continues to serve on a number of committees, including leadership, audit and risk, and risk management. She's the convener of the Institute's mentoring working group. And last but not least, in addition to being an FIAA, she also holds a licentiate diploma in music and is a licentiate of the UK Associated Board of the Royal Schools of Music, specialising in piano performance. I'd like a bit of that diversity of background. So everyone, you could welcome Gloria, please.
Thanks, David. Well, virtually every industry in this world is affected by technological change, and the insurance industry is no different. What distinguishes the insurance industry from the rest, though, is the role of actuaries. We are embedded in it. And as the industry undergoes change in an unprecedented pace, it begs the question of what is the role of the actuary in the future? In an age when cars can be driverless, what can we as actuaries do that cannot be automated? Or are we going to be disrupted out? Well, we as actuaries have a choice to embrace the technological change and to evolve with it, or to ignore it and keep doing what we've been doing all along. It's also a choice of seeing it as an opportunity or as a threat to our very being. This presentation builds on the work that we've done internally at Deloitte on the topic of transformation and also includes my lens on how we as a profession can respond to technological advancement. Lots of actuaries spend time building relatively esoteric spreadsheets, partly because it's fun, but we get wrapped up in the process and we lose sight of the outcome or the so what. So when you're back in the office after this conference, what will you do differently to leverage technology? What tasks would you look to automate in your team or in your own role? So let's have a look at how technology has advanced over time, very, very briefly. So this is a bit of evolution over time. You can see the abacus in the ancient times, the slide rules, the handheld calculators and computers. They're all relatively gradual changes. And our profession has survived through leveraging all these respective technologies. We've got the calculator that replaced the various approximation methods through commutation functions, which many of us studied. We've got the computer, which we've leveraged it to help us with strong power to manipulate data and doing analysis. But the change that's facing us now is much of a substantial leap. We're talking about, you know, automation and artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence potentially replaces thinking. So are we ready for this change? And is our profession going to survive this? I've come across futures articles that predict a few million jobs will disappear by 2030. Pretty astounding figure. But if we think about the jobs that have been lost in the past, having been superseded by technology, think about the milkman, the typist, or the elevator operators. Perhaps this prediction isn't that surprising after all. So we as actuaries need to respond to the change, otherwise we will become irrelevant. My sense is that we are making some sort of headway in the right direction, but the question is, are we making this change and responding quickly enough? Are we going to be learning from Kodak and be like Fuji? Or better still, be like Instagram? So let's relate it more specifically to our work and our industry. You can see this slide set up a framework to think about the actuarial function. The vertical axis looks at the strategic impact. So the higher up on the axis, the more strategic impact you have. And on the horizontal axis, the further to the right-hand side, the more expert judgment is involved. If I could get you to think about your current role or the role of your team, what is the proportion of your team that you spend on data analysis work? And by that, I mean the time you spend on cleansing the data, reconciling the data, doing manual fixes, doing repetitive, process-driven mechanical work. So what is the proportion of the time that you spend on these tasks? So can I get a show of hands, and it's not a rhetorical question. Hands up for those of you who spend over 10% of time doing these data analysis work. Yeah, quite a fair bit. What about over 20%? Keep your hands up. Over 30%? Got a couple of hands down. Over 40%? A couple. Yep, great. So based on this mini poll, what you're telling me is that a significant portion of your time is spent on data work. And we all know the frustrations related to some of these data cleansing work and data reconciliation. And if we map that activity against this particular framework on this slide, what you're telling me is that you're spending a disproportionate amount of time on the bottom left-hand triangle. So that's the unshaded area. And because so much time is spent on this unshaded area, there's not enough time to actually do what actuaries are best suited to do, and that is looking at what are the key messages from the data, what are the implications of the data, and how do we make decisions based on these analyses. Another way we can think about this is to look at the actuarial role in four areas, or what we call four faces, consisting of the steward, the operator, the catalyst, and the strategist. You've got the boxes on the side looking at some of the elements under each of these four faces. The steward and operator role, these are crucial because it's about looking after the insurer from a financial perspective and also ensuring that the actuarial function operates as efficiently as possible. Some of us are involved in contributing to strategy, so that's the strategist roles. And others are pushing through initiatives, so that's the catalyst roles. If we think about the data work, these are typically on the bottom half of this diagram, so the steward and the operator roles. What you've just told me as a collective is that you spend a disproportionate amount of time on this bottom half of the diagram, which is fine in itself. But the question is, are we adding enough value? The collective experience over here in this room is actually consistent with the research results that we conducted over the last 2 years, covering 100 actuarial functions locally and worldwide. We have found that actuaries are currently spending too much time on the steward and operator roles, but they aspire to spending more time on the top half of the diagram, i.e. the catalyst and the strategist roles. And you can see this in the diagram on the slide. The shaded area looks at the current state, so the current balance between the four faces, and the dotted diagram, the dotted lines, represents the desired balance of the four faces. This research highlights that a well-functioning actuarial team is one where the steward and operator roles are performed really well, which in turn then provides actuaries with the opportunity to focus more of their time as catalysts and strategists. So in addition to our aspirations, we also have stakeholder expectations, which mean that we need to find better ways to deliver our value add. Here are some common pain points that we've observed in insurers globally. You can see all the various C-suites and their demands on actuarial teams. So C-suite expects timely information. They expect explanations of the results and why things have changed. Yet actuaries are hampered by outdated systems, legacy processes, very onerous data gathering and process maintenance, and we simply don't have the tools to efficiently respond to these management requests. We spend hours and hours on data reconciliation work, getting the processes right and getting stuck in our own comfort zone. And then at the very end, we scramble together and make this really, really complicated ILVRs presented to management without thinking through what is it that the end product that management really, really needs. So there are clearly demands on actuaries to do more than just data, and we need to be more efficient in doing actuarial work. And this is where robotics or automation come in. Because a lot of the activities are process-driven, robots could potentially be programmed to do these activities. And instead of seeing them as a threat, we can actually leverage them, just like we've leveraged all sorts of technology in the past. Robots can enable some of the activities that the operator and steward roles do and free us up to do other high-value-added activities. So what is a robot or robotic process automation, RPA? That's a massive topic in itself, so I won't go through all the details, but if I could summarize it in a single sentence, I'd say robotics mimics human interactions with software applications to automate repetitive, rule-based processes. It's different to artificial intelligence in that it mimics human judgment. So human interactions versus human judgment. For the purpose of this presentation, I'm going to use the terms robotics and automation pretty loosely. Remember that a robot doesn't need to be a physical robot like R2-D2 in Star Wars. A good way to think about robotics is a virtual worker. My view is that the future workforce will consist of virtual workers as well as human workers. So you can see a number of key robotic skills here on the slide. There are a number of criteria which lend themselves easily to be robotized. So here are six questions. So whether there are a high number of systems involved, high transaction volume, high predictability, limited exception, lots of errors or manual work. So typical candidates that can benefit from robotics have repeatable and predictable interactions with IT applications, including toggling between multiple applications. It's actually not limited to any specific industry. It's applicable to any methodical, standardized, repetitive processes that have consistent rules. An example will be retrieving information from the claims database and entering it into the valuation model. So why would you consider robotics? Well, quick answer is it's cheaper and it's faster than onshore or offshore workers. There won't be any fatigue. You can work them 24/7. You don't have to give them annual leave or sick leave for that matter, although you do have to turn off the systems once in a while. The robot-based process performance is designed to be more predictable and more consistent and less prone to error than a human process. You can deploy these in weeks without having to go through a prolonged recruitment system or process. It keeps audit trails 100% of the time, and you could flexibly scale it up or scale it down depending on demand. You don't need to have major IT changes, which, as we all know, takes lots of time to move up the priority queue, and it's very costly as well. And the tasks performed here can be monitored and recorded at every single step. So let's have a look at an example. Valuation. Valuation lends itself to the use of robotics really nicely. Because a significant amount of time is taken up in the data cleansing process, especially having data from different systems, there is an increasing desire to streamline the valuation and the processes. So this is a simplified diagram of a typical valuation process. And there are many steps even within each of these circles as well. For this anonymized client with multiple classes of business, the valuation typically takes about 6 days. Half of it is involved in data cleansing. So what we did was to sit down and codify the process and then automated it. And it resulted in shrinking the time to complete the valuation to 2 days. The key part of automating this process was a detailed understanding of the process flow. As you can see, there are many steps in the data preparation stage, and there are layers of technical and review and QA review as well. So for this particular insurer, there were lots of different sources of data that needs to be extracted from different systems. We then needed to put it into a different format. There were different product codes that need to be mapped to the different valuation classes, currency conversion issues, lots and lots of interlinking spreadsheets requiring manual checks and reconciliations. There were just no single source of truth, which means that reconciliation was done left, right, and center. Version control was also an issue because there were different people working on the files as well. And through sitting down and understanding the process, we realized there were a lot of banded approaches that have been added over time. So what we did was to redesign the process to streamline it. We then identified the parts of the process that could be automated, for example, the data cleansing, the data reconciliation, even parts of the valuation, for example, looking at the mechanical assumption selection, for example, the average of the past 4 periods. And using proprietary application, we then constructed a routine that replicates the process in a more accurate and efficient way. And we were able to maintain a process audit trail through the process, and we built in mechanisms to prompt the user where there's a need to apply expert judgment. We were able to perform this process over a shorter period of time and reduce the number of people involved as well. So a few key learnings from this process. It's really important not to automate broken processes. It's easy to sit down, note down, you know, these are the various steps of the actual current process and just get a robot to automate it. But that's actually not the idea. The idea is to really think about how to make the process efficient before implementing automation. And it's also important to note that not every process lends itself to automation. So have a think about what would be appropriate for a robot to do. Clearly documenting the end-to-end process is absolutely crucial, as is doing parallel runs to test the automation before the go-live. Stakeholder management, again, key to ensure there's effective buy-in. So the initial setup is an upfront investment, and it is quite a time-consuming process to document the end-to-end process and to redesign it. But overall, we found it to be reasonably smooth. And by shortening the reserving time, we were able to free up our local resources to really focus on what matters, to work out the insights and to explain the results to management. Rick Shaw, who leads our general insurance practice, always looks for the answers to 3 key questions in the valuation. One is, what has changed since last year? 2 is, are we making a profit? And 3 is, do we have enough money? So what that does is to really lift the actuarial work to a board-level discussion. And this is in line with the APRA discussion paper on the role of the appointed actuary. The current task base and compliance focus on the role of the appointed actuary have been raised by insurers and the appointed actuaries alike as limiting the capacity for actuaries to provide strategic level advice to boards and senior management. So actuarial work is a combination of science and art. And while robots can help with the science part, as we've just seen in the valuation example, the art part remains. There are many other opportunities that we can turn our efforts to when our time is freed up through leveraging technology. We can apply actuarial judgment, something that I don't believe robots or even artificial intelligence can do. One example is that I've been involved in helping set up a new insurer. So it's about designing the insurer of the future to ensure that it is competitive. Competition doesn't just come from incumbent insurers in the future. It's also about those who own the data and who have the technological capability to mine the data. It's the likes of Google, which could completely disrupt the insurance market. And they are poised to develop efficient admin and underwriting systems and able to target and select those better risks. We think about the millions of dollars that many insurers spend on their current admin system. The archaic IT architecture and many band-aid solutions that have been added on over the years hold them back from development. Yet cloud-based solution is only a fraction of the costs that insurers pay to update their antiquated systems. The insurer of the future is one that is built around actuarial thinking. It's about setting up a new insurer that puts actuarial thinking at the very center. Pricing is done on real-time basis, as we've heard the importance of real-time in the plenary session earlier today. And it's about having feedback mechanism built in as efficiently as possible. Consider the capital required on a portfolio basis in real time. So how much additional capital is required to write an additional risk? The 1,000th risk I write in theory should have a higher cost because it's more correlated to the other risks, and therefore we should hold more capital against it. Data is also central to the future, as is the construct of analytics for underwriting. For example, pricing algorithms that reflect social media activity or marketing campaigns that seek to target good risks. Another example I was involved in was the independent review of the New South Wales CTP scheme that was commissioned by the New South Wales government. We were tasked with reviewing the scheme design, the profitability, how market competition can be stimulated, and whether there could be any regulatory improvements. It was a project that required the collaboration of economists as well as actuaries. The engagement required an understanding of the perspectives of many stakeholders who have strong opposing views. The matters for consideration were complex, and it required a delicate balance of the policy goals in the construct of private underwriting of this compulsory public good. But this is actually our sweet spot. The heart of actuarial thinking is balancing conflicting financial interest. And strategy or policy needs to be built on the bedrock of actuarial insight. So the review made recommendations on redesigning the system, removing layers of duplicates in processes in line with the objectives of the scheme, all of which are not able to be robotized. So expectations of the actuarial function and its capabilities are continuing to rise, and teams are being asked to do more with less. So how do we become more efficient in our operations and processes? So far we've talked about automation. But transforming the actuarial function is much broader than that. For example, offshoring could be a better option than automation for some insurers. We need to consider the broader issue of the operating model of the actuarial function. So which operating model is suitable for your actuarial function? Here are four to consider: decentralized, service centers, offshoring, and outsourcing. Some of the questions to consider are, where is the organization using ACTrees at present? Where should it be using ACTrees? And what should be put in place to ensure that their value is effectively delivered? The operating model is unique to each insurer, and it will depend on factors such as existing geographies, business partnering options, internal stakeholder demands, and local regulatory differences. Some guiding principles in making this decision would be for ACTrees to focus on data requirements and analysis rather than data extraction and production. For ACTrees to delegate roles that do not require technical actuarial skills. For work efforts to be rationalised to eliminate redundant processes or procedures. And processes that need consistency should be considered for centralisation. So a good place to start transforming the actuarial function is to do a stock take of where you are now. So you can consider the actuarial function in six broad areas or six functions. So you've got six functions here on the left-hand side. And for each of those functions in turn, look at the six dimensions. If we take an example of the reserving function and go through some of the questions you would think about for each of those sub-dimensions. Under the process dimension, some of the questions you would want to ask is, what level of standardization currently exists within the analysis and reporting processes across locations and business units? To what extent is automation used to carry out tasks within the function? How much time and effort is spent on debugging, rework, updating, testing, and other maintenance tasks of the automated process? Are analysis and reporting processes executed at the proper level of granularity, given the location and the business unit? Have the trade-offs between more granular analysis and time and effort spent been evaluated? What is the frequency and duration of the closed cycle? Are there any process dependencies or roadblocks that create a lengthy close? And are processes robust and flexible enough to quickly perform ad hoc sensitivity or scenario testing? Turning to the technology dimension, are the actuarial systems capable of modelling claim liabilities using the appropriate methodologies? Are all the key product features modelled accurately? Are there significant model capability limitations or deficiencies? What type of visualization tools are used by the function and how effectively are they being utilized? Does the staff have sufficient knowledge of the currently used tools? Onto the information dimension. Do ACTrees have access to data at the right level of granularity with respect to the business unit, product and geography? Is the data stored so that it can be easily summarized, drilled down into, and analyzed easily? And do the stakeholders have the ability to drill down into the summary level details and across the results at a more granular level? And considering the audience, well, how effectively are the outputs produced by the function? Do the outputs convey a sufficient level of detail that's appropriate to the audience's skill set? What about people? Are the technical skill sets suitable for the tasks performed? Is senior leadership effective in providing the direction to the group and allocating resources? Are technology partnerships and strategic communication skills nourished and encouraged? Are resources experienced commensurate with the roles and the responsibilities assigned? Are ACTrees teamed up with non-ACTrees or IT professionals to outsource the less technical actuarial activities? Onto operation, location and organisation. Does the organisation effectively utilise geographic placement to access local talents, expertise of their respective markets? And for governance, what level of documentation exists for policies and procedures within the function? Are the controls operating effectively? And are the controls far enough upstream to identify the issues early? Are the controls documented? Are they manual or automated? So these are just some of the questions that you would want to ask yourself. Here's an example of a maturity curve for a reserving function. And we've got descriptors under each category of the maturity, or each stage of maturity. Vertical axis looks at the strategic impact. So the higher up the axis, the more strategic impact you have. And on the horizontal axis represents the investment in the in the function itself. So clearly the more that you invest in it, the more mature the function you expect it to be. If we think about the stage one of this maturity curve, the very relatively basic stage, the data processes are relatively manual. And there's little stakeholder engagement, which is why the strategic impact is relatively low. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got data processes that are automated, and you've got the function that challenges the status quo for pricing, underwriting, and strategy. So pretty high strategic impact. So for each function, identify where you are along the curve, where you want to be along the curve. Remembering you may not choose to be at level 5 for each individual function. And then it's about identifying how we can bridge the gap and prioritize those improvement functions. So given the technological changes, successful actuaries of the future will need to blend the skill sets to become key strategic business partners. The business will expect actuary qualities to go beyond standards of excellence to include leadership and strategic insights. To develop skill sets to meet these future business demands, actuarial functions need to start creating what we call purple people. So those are the mix of business and technical skills. It's no longer enough to just model and to analyze. Actuaries of the future need to communicate to the business in a language that the business understands. It's about asking the so what or so what next, and then providing insights on what really matters. It's a unique opportunity for actuaries to catalyze change and to be a valuable asset to the company's decision making. The other key part for us to maintain our competitiveness is to be constantly learning. Gone are the days where we can stop studying or stop learning after we become a qualified actuary. I came across an article last week. It's an article about a report by the Regional Australia Institute and NBN. And it found that one in two Australians will need skills in programming and digital technology to remain competitive in 2030. Skills like collaboration, entrepreneurship, creativity, in addition to technical proficiency, are crucial. But if we think about these, they're actually not in our current education curriculum, which means that we're potentially not equipping ourselves well for the future. So it's actually quite timely that the Actuaries Institute is reviewing the education strategy at this point in time. As for the future generation of actuaries, potentially there need to be a bit of a paradigm shift. We think about our own careers, how most of us started off as vacationers or graduates and doing relatively repetitive tasks, entering data into models, and that's how we learned and developed and got familiar with some of the modelling techniques and developed a sense of what is reasonable and what's not. But these roles will actually be replaced by robots in a few years' time. So how are upcoming graduates going to learn actuarial judgment? Well, my view is that mentoring is going to become increasingly important. It's about learning from the experiences of those who have gone before us, almost like an apprenticeship model. And it's not actually new as such, because it's been what the medical profession been doing all along. So an example is a medical registrar in neurology will sit down next to a senior neurologist and learn how they interpret the MRI scan results. So I started off this presentation looking at the evolution of technology and the question of whether we can survive the next technological advancement. I certainly believe that we can. So I'll leave you with two quotes that resonated with me in terms of what I consider as key to building a successful future for us as a profession. Thank you.
Thank you, Gloria. Some very, very thought-provoking points and observations there. So we don't have long for questions. I might just kick us off with one that certainly struck me through your presentation. So this desire, I suppose, that your research shows of the profession to shift the role from operators and stewards to strategists and catalysts. You touched on it very briefly at the end of your presentation, but both from the point of view of education and training for the profession, as well as reputation, what do you think the profession will need to do to be able to enable its members to make that shift?
I think that's a really good question. So there, I think we are actually on the way. First up is to really be aware that we need to make the change. I think throughout these past 2 days of the seminar, it's certainly been made very clear that there is a bit of a gap in terms of some of the skills that we have. Whether it's about communication to boards and communicating in a way that the audience understands, not just in our typical actuarial modelling language. So communication is one, but also having that mindset to be constantly curious, constantly challenging ourselves and thinking about, you know, if the current status quo is like this, what can be done differently so that we can improve the business outcomes? So it's about thinking about the outcomes rather than thinking about the process itself. And I think I touched on it a little bit earlier in terms of the apprenticeship model. I think that's a key thing that we as a profession can really learn from, and the Institute's mentoring program also enables that to happen from a formal perspective. But certainly, I'd encourage everyone to go and find your own mentor, whether it's from an informal perspective or more formally as well. Just thinking about asking questions of how these really, really experienced actuaries who've been doing these things for 30, 40 years make actuarial judgments without having to go through all the actual modelling themselves.
Thank you. So we have a little bit of time. Do we have questions from the floor? Don't all jump up at once. Thank you.
Oh, it's Dimitri. Yes, so do you think, your framework for transforming actuarial functions, do you think, does it go far enough, or do we have to take it another step further? I mean, if you look at how the kind of new economy digital companies operates, right, the product managers there are not at all like your insurance product managers. Like the people actually are aware. They have pretty good understanding of software development, sort of IT implementation architecture, as well as how you can use the analytics to improve the performance and so on. And these are the people actually calling the shots, right? In insurance companies, it's not how it works, right? So this automation exercise requires really bringing together product, IT, and analytics into essentially a single unit that works really closely together, not how they've perhaps done it before. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I certainly think that collaboration is a key to the future. And you're absolutely right that, you've got IT experts and, you've got your underwriting people and other sorts of professionals who are in the mix and trying to all gather together to make the best decisions for the organization. And I guess what's important for us as actuaries is that we need to be part of that discussion rather than kind of be seen as the people who just crunch the numbers and just come up with a number and the rest of the people decide on what's actually happening. And so I think that's why the idea behind that framework is to ensure that whilst we do the steward and operator roles really well, we need to really move towards the catalyst and strategist roles so that we have a seat at the table. And we need to demonstrate that we are able to add value to those areas. It's too often we are seen as just number crunchers, and that itself is not a particularly great thing in terms of reputation, but we really need to, demonstrate that we are able and capable of collaborating with others, learning new skills, not being the experts ourselves in every single area, because that's just not possible, but it's about leveraging and working with a diverse group of people to come up with the optimal solution for the company.
All right. Well, look, I'm sure if there's further questions for Gloria, you can certainly take those up with her over lunch or at some point in the future. So I'll just remind everyone, please, to put your feedback on via the Institute's website. And if you could just join me again, please, in thanking Gloria for a really insightful presentation.